And hour number two, talking about last night's game. The Kings win their fourth straight. They're on an airplane as we speak. They're on their way to Portland. They will take on the Portland Trailblazers coming up for you tomorrow. We'll be on the air at 3. Then we'll have game night at 6 and all the action coming your way at 7 with the pregame and 7:30 with the tip. I'll be at the Moda Center. Doug will be in San Francisco, and we are looking forward to doing that. Let's get to Casey. Hello, Casey.
Hey, Grand Doug. How you guys doing?
What's happening?
Not much. So I watch almost every Kings game, and I happened to be at the game last night. And to me, I'm having a problem with the amount of time that DeMarcus Cousins is sitting at certain times. Last night in the third quarter with a minute 50 seconds left, he sat down, and he didn't come back until 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And it was actually 30 minutes of actual time and 8 minutes of game time. And to me, it just seems like that at times Jaeger's sitting him for too long of periods. It's like if I was looking at the numbers, he's getting 34.7 minutes a game, and that's 22nd in the NBA, so it's not that far off from the top guys. The top guy in the NBA is averaging 37.5 minutes per game. My question is, I looked back just 10 years ago at minutes per game, and there was 22 players who played more than the highest amount of minutes played by a player this year, which is Zach LaVine. So why do you guys think that the players are resting so much and that the average minutes per player is going down when these guys are the best conditioned athletes in the world?
I don't get it. I don't understand that. And thank you. I've got to go because we've got a guest. I personally feel it's very difficult to second guess a coach for playing a player X number of minutes when you've won 4 in a row. You know, they won last night, and DeMarcus made a huge play both offensively and defensively, and I can't really criticize. Plus, here's the other deal. You know, DeMarcus had 4 fouls on him. He needs him at the end of the game, so if you put him in with too much time and he picks up his 5th, then all of a sudden he's got to play with his hands in the pocket. So, you know, all of those things and more. All right. Each and every week, we absolutely love talking to the man, Charles Davis, from the NFL on Fox. Charles, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys tonight? I hope Santa was good to you. And I'm sure you playing Santa. I'm sure you guys were good to others.
We were good to others, but thank you. Absolutely. We didn't have the beautiful weather that you have in Orlando with, what, temperature in the 80s?
It was hot.
Hot?
I mean, look, I'm glad to be here. And it's wonderful to be in Orlando this time of year, but I can't help it. On Christmas Day, I really want it, at worst, to just at least be overcast, be cool, be something. Make me feel like it, you know, because I know where I am. And I chose to live here. This isn't a major complaint, but I'm from New York. You know, I grew up in New York State. I like snow on the ground at the holiday. So I guess anyone who can hear my voice is like, well, look, dummy, if you want that, be someplace like that for the holiday.
Hey, Charles.
That's an excellent point, folks, an excellent point.
Charles, this morning I was doing the Rome show, and I had I threw out a topic of who you think the MVP in the National Football League should be. And I got to tell you, the name that came up more than any others was Matt Ryan. I know you've done the Falcons this year several times. Yeah, you look at his numbers, they're absolutely tremendous. And again, I don't have all the numbers in front of me, and I'm asking you to do this off the top of your head, but do you think Matt Ryan right now is playing as well as he ever has?
He's playing better than he ever has. Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. Having seen him a couple of times now in person, I see the change from 2015 to 2016, let alone the beginning of his career through this time. You know, getting Kyle Shanahan as his offensive coordinator and running what Kyle wants to run on offense has been an adjustment for Matt. And he may have downplayed it a little bit, but I don't think there's any question about it. They've asked him to do things in that offense that he didn't get asked to do before. And before our last game, Kyle Shanahan encapsulated it very well for me. He said, look, when I got here, Matt Ryan had been in a system, essentially the same system, for 7 years and did the same things and had success with it. So when I come in and ask him to do a few other things, if he had an arched eyebrow, you could understand that. But I never got that from him. He said, last year we shelved some things because it wasn't, it wasn't taking. But when we came back for the offseason, he said, Matt Ryan came to me and said, look, let's get fully indoctrinated in what you want to do. And that takes a lot for a veteran quarterback who's had success like Matt. It's not like he wasn't a Pro Bowl guy. He'd been to three. It wasn't like they hadn't had success. He'd been to an NFC Championship game and won division titles. So for him to put full trust into that OC and say that, and even he said even last year when we shelved things, he didn't trust me. It's just that he didn't adapt to it. It wasn't fully ingrained like changing your golf swing. So he would revert back to the things he knew, and he spent the whole offseason trying to get right with that. And you see the end result. And last but not least, a lot of people would say, well, he's got Julio Jones. Julio might be the MVP. We did a little chart in our game, guys, and showed Julio's season. And sure, he's the leading receiver in big numbers. But if you look at Julio, 300 one game, 29 the next. 35, 107.
Right.
Boom, boom, boom. So that's not a knock on Julio, who is the least diva receiver that I know of. It's just Matt Ryan had to fashion offense at other times without Julio, and a lot of those numbers were down because teams said, look, we're not going to let Julio catch the ball today. Someone else has to do it. And Matt would adapt and do that. So the MVP talk, long story short, is legitimate to me. And if he ended up walking away with it, you'd have no fight from me at all.
Wow. L.A., Jacksonville, Buffalo, out of those three coaching vacancies, in your opinion, and I value your opinion, which one do you think is probably the best one for a coach going in?
L.A., Jacksonville, Buffalo?
Yeah.
Probably in the order that you rank them for these reasons. One, L.A., it's really an open market for you. You can make it what you want.
Okay.
In other words, if you go in there and have success, you can own that market. Because the L.A. market wants to flock to what's winning and what's hot and what's now.
Right.
Okay, so you can do that. Jacksonville, are you going to be there? Meaning that London thing still looms out there. Every year they're going to play in London because the owner wants to be a part of that and wants to do that. And it's just not a market that's just totally grasped on. I mean, it's still the Florida-Georgia game is still huge. played in that stadium, you know? And so that's one of the things you go through. And last but not least, Buffalo, that just seems really dysfunctional to me right now. I mean, the way things went down with Rex Ryan, we all knew that he was kind of out. You never heard anything from the GM until today, and now the GM's going to lead the search for the new guy. And I'm not saying Rex absolutely deserved to stay.
Right.
But I think that the whole thing just kind of went kaput, and they haven't been to the playoffs since 99. And so I think it's very hard, and here it is. Here's the last part, Doug. Rookie quarterback drafted number one in L.A. You've got to think that if you come in, you've got a chance to make it work with him.
Right.
Okay, he was drafted number one. All right, I think if you ask most of the league, they would not have said no to either him or Wentz at the top of the board last year.
Yep.
So that's something you look at. Two, Jacksonville, you got to decide if you can work that out with Blake Bortles as well. To me, he regressed in a big way this year. And I want to know what's going on there. And
right.
In Buffalo, you have no quarterback because I don't think that anyone's going to walk in and say, Tyrod's my guy or E.J. Manuel, who they'll start this weekend, is my guy. They don't have a QB.
I think you left out the most important part when you were talking about the first two. It's really simple. Do you want to live in Buffalo or do you want to live in Southern California?
You know, Grant, you know me really well. And you know I was trying to be really nice about it. I mean, unless you are really, you know, unless your middle name is Nanook. All right?
Oh, my gosh.
But the flip side is, if you go to Buffalo and make it work, you are really embraced.
Oh, no question. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, that
incredible
community will rally in
yes.
a hurry, and they can't wait to have a winner again.
That's true. I mean, look at, you know, Marv Levy, look at Bruce Smith, look at Kelly, and those guys didn't win Super
those
Bowls. But, I mean, you're right. Can you imagine winning? Could you imagine a coach that wins a Super Bowl at some point in time in Buffalo?
Statue.
Oh, wow. Listen, Thurman Thomas, who I got to know a little bit here in Orlando, he moved his family back to Buffalo.
Really?
From Orlando?
Now think about that.
I am trying to think about it, and I can't comprehend it.
You should see his face, Charles.
As we well know, it's two things. One, where did he make his bones as a pro? Buffalo, obviously. That was the spot, and that community embraces you, and you still have an identity. And those Bills players walk around that city, and people are still like, Thurman, you're the man. Second thing is, well, his wife is from Buffalo.
Oh, so okay.
Oh. Well, okay. Yeah. You just solved the puzzle for us, Charles.
Hey, I buried the lead, too.
Oh, my goodness. Charles, I'm curious. You know, fans talk about this, and, you know, you take a look at it, Dallas, and they're at Philadelphia. Should they play? Shouldn't they play? I don't want to say every, but, you know, coaches have their own philosophy, and I don't know who's making the decisions. I would assume it's Jerry Jones. Do you fall on one side of the ledger on these things?
I tend to go case by case, but if I have to go ahead and lump it into a general deal, I'm going to play my guys. But I also am going to be smart about it, meaning if I get to a certain point in the game, let's say we aren't playing real well. Why am I forcing it today if I'm locked in? Okay, I'm going to get some key guys out. If, you know, I get a half in, maybe that's enough. We tap it out at that point. I mean, that's going to be my thing. But I can't help but can remember Tom Coughlin playing those guys with the Giants.
Yeah, with the Patriots, yeah.
Against New England. You remember Grant
Yeah. Yep.
And remember, his playoff position didn't change one way or the other.
Nope.
And he had guys who were beat up. And his thing was, we're going after these guys, and that's the way football's supposed to be played. And I do think it paid dividends because doing it then took away whatever awe was going on with the Patriots season being undefeated. So when they saw them again a few weeks later, the awe factor was done, even though they lost that game. And I heard Belichick say today, I don't know what you mean by resting starters. I can only have seven guys inactive. So if they're here, they might as well be playing. And I did hear a conversation, I thought, on another radio show earlier today where they were talking about when the quarterback's supposed to come out of the game. And I think we all have that discussion all the time about, hey, you're winning big, get your quarterback out. My years in the NFL, do you know what I've noticed? Is that they don't take them out.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. It
no, they
is
don't.
Rare.
Yes, it
and
is.
And I remember talking to Bruce Arians about it last year. We did a game in Chicago where they were killing the Bears. And Carson Palmer played the whole way. And I said, do you worry about that? He just looked at me like, this is the NFL you play. And that was the end of the discussion as far as he was concerned. All right, Matt Ryan has actually been pulled out of the last series and a half, last two series max in the two previous games to Carolina. But they're up big in the fourth quarter in Carolina. He's still playing. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the NFL way. And so you notice that within the NFL, no one is killing Jack Del Rio about Carr being hurt. No one is going to be on, you know, Mariota had to play because Tennessee is trying to get there. But you get my point. They don't really look at it the way I think the rest of us do. And in college football, you have a lot more guys you can throw out there, too. So it's a different deal.
I wish these guys coached in the NBA.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing.
Well, you know, and it's such a deal because, Doug, you guys play 82 regular season.
Yeah.
Then what, you got 10 preseason?
Eight
preseason. So now you're right there at 90, and then you play playoffs and the whole deal. It's a, you know, it's a tough deal, but the NFL, even though it's 16 games,
oh boy,
the collisions will help make up for the lack of games.
Easily.
You know?
Yes.
Because, I mean, I forgot which coach said it first, but it really is true. Football is not a contact sport. It's a collision sport. And collisions are infinitely tougher than contact.
Yes,
you know,
they
I forgot
are.
One coach said, contact is ballroom dancing, man. This is collision.
That's beautiful.
But before we get off the air, Grant, you got to pose the question to Charles because I want to hear that answer.
Oh, I was throwing out today, let's just assume New England's going to be the number one seed. I think they'll beat Miami, but just for sake of conversation, if I told you that only one of the two number one seeds would advance to the Super Bowl, do you care to make a guess, would you choose New England or Dallas? And I told Doug, I said, what's interesting about this, there's the unknown against the known. I pretty much know, or at least think, New England's not going to beat themselves. I think I know how Tom Brady's going to play. I don't think that New England would beat themselves in a championship game on their home field, although Baltimore did it. And with Dallas, I mean, listen, there have been a lot of great players that have played in the regular season, and it doesn't translate into the postseason. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know how Dak Prescott's going to do. I just think it's interesting. You know, which of the two do you think is going to have a tougher sledding, so to speak?
Well, I think the smart money would be to New England. They've done it too many times. Mm-hmm. And we've said it during this show. I'm not going to put words in your guys' mouth, but I think we all kind of agree that somehow Bill Belichick and his staff find a way to fill gaps.
Yeah.
Or just go to other strengths when they don't have certain things. I mean, it's the most amazing thing to me is every year. And by the way, their drafting isn't really that good. I mean, if you really go ahead and analyze in the last 8 to 10 years their drafts, you're kind of like, meh.
I don't know.
Right.
And that's supposed to be the lifeblood of a team. Yet they have. Yet Rob Ninkowski can go to a Pro Bowl for them. Yeah. You know what I mean? People are like, who the heck was Rob Ninkowski?
Yeah.
And just go right down the line. So they know how to do it. But I will say this. You know, Dallas impressed the heck out of me last night. And I know a lot of people were sitting there going, yeah, Detroit. No, no, you're missing the point. They had Zip to play for. Zip. They're locked in.
Yeah.
Totally. And Detroit ran at them. It's 21-21 game.
Yeah, they were going back and forth.
And Detroit had everything to play for. Because Detroit really did not want to get to Sunday night at home against Green Bay, and that's your playoff livelihood.
Yeah.
They could have taken care of it last night. See, they win last night. We're good. Even if you're not going to win the division, you're probably going into the playoffs. Now it's win the division or probably not go anywhere. That's what Detroit's
doing.
So they did everything. And how about what Dallas did with that?
Yeah.
That was, to me, that was one of the most impressive wins I've seen this season, especially with a team that had Zip to worry about because they were done. And, truthfully, the Tony Romo thing, that's all us talking about it. In Dallas, even Jerry Jones is not even talking about really playing Tony Romo. And I'm sure Tony Romo's like, look, you're not running me out there for some ceremonial handoffs.
Right.
I'm not doing that.
So you mentioned the Lions and the Packers. Sunday Night Football, it's going to be big-time stuff. Kind of give us your take about what you think we might see.
Well, I think what you're going to see is a great effort out of Detroit. I was a little puzzled last night how well they ran it in the first half and didn't run it in the second. It's like they just abandoned it totally.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was Zach Zenner, but he was actually doing some pretty good work in the first half.
Yes, he was.
And that offensive line is built to run the football, frankly, because if Graham Glasgow is playing center, Lakin Tomlinson and Larry Warford are your guards, they're all road graders. So I want to run the ball a little bit more in that situation. Taylor Decker's coming along at left. Riley Reiff at right tackle. Reiff's an Iowa kid. He's going to run the football. So that surprised me. They got away from that. Randall Cobb may or may not be back for Green Bay. But right now, Aaron Rodgers doesn't care. If we all ran routes right now, Aaron Rodgers would make sure we caught the ball in a good spot.
Right.
I mean, that's just where he is. So I really think that everyone's looking at it like it's a fait accompli with Green Bay. But I did those three Detroit games. I know that they will be ready to play. It's just hard to get past the Green Bay mystique. Mm. And the way the Packers are playing right now. I had them earlier this year. They were up 31-3 on Detroit. Detroit ran at them late. But that game being thrown out the window. This entirely different Packers team. But I feel like this is a Detroit team that's running out of gas. And they actually have less time to prepare. Luckily, they're at home.
Right.
But that Monday night killed them.
That's a great point.
On the road, back.
Good point.
Trying to get right. Will they have Theo Riddick, right on down the line? This is the Stafford's hurt with the finger.
Yep.
But, boy, oh, boy, I thought last night they put a lot of juice into trying to get it taken care of with Dallas.
That's a good point.
So I don't know about their emotional debt as well to try and get back up even though it's Green Bay. I like Green Bay winning it, Doug.
Last week, you spent time talking to us about your relationship with Reggie McKenzie from your days at Tennessee. I can't even imagine, what his life is like this week with what happened with Derek Carr. But now you have Matt McGloin. It is what it is. I would think it is just unbelievably important that he plays well on Sunday. Doesn't have to play great, but it's got to play well to gain the confidence of that locker room. What are your thoughts on that?
Agree. Just don't screw it up, Matt McGloin, on Sunday. I mean, give your team a reason to feel like there's some confidence going into the playoffs, that they don't have to have a superhuman effort to win games, that they have to have a professional, competent effort. That's what he has to give them on Sunday. And he's been through the fire a little bit before. And remember, this is a kid who was a walk-on at Penn State that became a starter, undrafted in the NFL, that has started a few games in the NFL. So I don't think he's the type of kid that'll be fazed by this. He's the type of kid I think that privately is like, psh, you guys keep doubting me. Here I go again, mm-hmm. and I'm ready to play. But I do think this is where Reggie McKenzie will tell Jack Del Rio, this is why I spent all this money on the offensive line for you. They've got it. We got to lean on those fellas from here on out. Latavius Murray, we got to keep him going in the run game and make it comfortable for McGloin so we're not always throwing on third and long. That's what they're going to have to do to make things easier for everyone, because if they don't win first and second down now, and now all of a sudden Matt McGloin's got to throw it 35 times a game in a game, I think they're going to get beat.
Well, how about
that? And that's just where it is. And if you're going to throw it, Matt McGloin might throw it on first and second down. See, throwing the head in the count, uh-huh. where now maybe you're getting a few more base defenses, even though they're going the way of the dodo bird, but a little bit more of, hey, I throw it on first down, something safe, and try and run it from there on out. So we'll see. But that offensive line, they put a lot of money and a lot of time into that line. Here's that time for the line to come forward for them.
Hey, Charles, yesterday the Kings were playing the Sixers, and we had the TV voice on for the 76ers. Name's Mark Zumoff. And, you know, me being who I am, we got off on started talking about, you know, the Broad Street Bullies with Dave Schultz and Bobby Clark and Rick McLeish and Moose DuPont. And Doug's kind of looking at me and Mark going, what are you guys talking about? I mean, I should get some videos out and let Doug look at those awesome. Guys play, huh?
The one video I really want you to pull for him, the first one I would start with, is when we played the Russian team in the Challenge Cup.
Oh boy!
When the Flyers played them in that one,
right?
And
yep.
show him the first 10, 15 minutes of the opening period, and watch the Russians skate off and go, we ain't doing this anymore.
I'm writing it down, Charles.
This is the legit deal. Back then, the Russian team was the best team in the world.
Right.
That was before the miracle of Miracle on Ice
in
76. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they came over and would play a challenge series against the best NHL teams and clean up. And that year, no one had beaten them, if I remember correctly, Grant.
Nobody had beaten them.
And the Broad Street Bullies, I think they were the defending champs at that
point. Yes, I believe they were.
They were the last hope. And they were playing in the Spectrum, and, I mean, that place was charged up. The whole country was with them. It's almost like our Miracle of 76 team where the whole country is with our boys from USA. Here's our chance. Hey, this is it, guys.
Yeah.
And the Broad Street Bullies. Now, international hockey and NHL hockey are two different animals anyway, but the hitting is different. And there's no fighting allowed at all in international hockey. But the Broad Street Bullies, Grant, I tell you, they hit them.
Like they were fighting?
As soon as the puck was dropped.
It was unbelievable.
Bodies were scattered. I mean, people were skating, getting clobbered, the whole deal. And Victor Tikhonov, their coach,
yep.
somewhere around the 15-minute mark of the first period, I think it was, said, that's it. And pulled his team off the ice, Doug. We're not doing this.
Yes,
yeah,
really?
Took him to the dressing room, said, we ain't coming out.
Right.
We're done.
Yep.
Oh,
and
boy.
The owner of the Flyers, who we lost, I believe, this year, Ed Snyder, went down to the Russians and through the interpreter said, no play, no check.
Ooh.
You figure it out.
Wow.
And then they came back out and finished the game.
I'm sure
and
they
the Broad
did.
Street Bullies beat the you-know-what out of them and beat them on the scoreboard.
Yep.
America cheered. So if you want to get a full view of them, watch the first period of that. And you'll go, oh, my God.
Well, and the other part of that is the Russians were used to skating on a much larger ice surface, and
yes.
the Spectrum was like playing in a bread box.
Can't get away.
They could not get away, Charles. You know what I'm talking about.
Doug, it's just like a boxing match where Sugar Ray Leonard wanted a bigger ring.
Right, yep.
And Roberto Duran wanted a smaller ring.
That's right. I want you close.
In the NHL for the Flyers would have said if you took another 30 feet of ice space away, it would be even better.
We're fine with that.
And everyone else was like, oh, no. Can we play international size, please?
Right.
Can we get it bigger?
Wow.
You know, it's kind of like the Edmonton Oilers.
They wanted
bigger rinks with Gretzky and those guys.
Sure.
And then, of course, the Islanders at that time, they would have wanted a smaller rink because they were more physical.
That's correct. Led by Captain Dennis Potvin.
Hey, Potvin sucks.
There you go, Doug.
I love it.
We got to get him a sweater.
Charles, I didn't even ask. Yes, we do have to get him a sweater. Where are you on Sunday?
I'm in Tampa Bay, Carolina, Tampa Bay. Last go round for both. Actually, Tampa still has a chance. But one of
Barely.
Their permutations is someone has to tie, and you know what that all means.
Yeah, I know. Well, the nice thing is you can drive to the game.
Yes, and drive home.
Yes,
there
beautiful.
You go.
Not so bad. You know, that'll be a way to end it. And looking forward to, you know, the game and the whole deal. And the last thing is, it's NFL football. And it's so funny because years ago, the last game I did in Tampa was the Falcons going for their first ever in history of franchise back-to-back winning season.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And they got it done that day. And here's Tampa. They haven't had a winning season since, 2010, somewhere in that neighborhood.
That's right.
And they're trying to get a winning season out of it. So we'll
you had Parker with you on the field that day.
I did, and he's talking about wanting to go back again. And right now we're negotiating and haggling over who his guest might be.
You're the best, Charles. Safe travels. We'll talk to you soon. You be well. Happy New Year, Charles.
Happy New Year to you as well. You two be safe, Doug. You take care of yourself.
Appreciate you.
And I look forward to it.
You got it.
All right, that's Charles Davis, NFL on Fox. Parker, his son, who's a freshman in college.
Oh,
good stuff
cool.
Right there.
Yeah, man. Be able to travel, drive up, drive back.
It's awesome.
I like how that works.
427, time for a retirement checkup. Call David Hedger at Granite Bay Asset Management Group, 791-1737. We're back right after this. All right, Charles Davis, good stuff. 339-1140. That's 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We are with you. I'm going to be vacating this seat at 5:30. Doug,
you leaving?
I have to leave.
What?
It's the holidays. No, so I have.
I'm going to be in here by myself?
You will be. But you'll have, just think of all the people that will be listening to you, so you're not really by yourself.
Callers? We're going to have a party when Grant leaves. We're going
to
turn up.
And I'm going to listen to you as I'm driving to the airport.
Oh.
All right? So you'll know you'll have somebody listening. It will be me. And, it's good for you, man. You'll be able to go solo for an hour and a half.
Oh, man.
You got some good guests coming on, though.
Yes, I do. Bobby Jackson will be joining me. E.T.
Elston Turner?
Yes, E.T. will be joining me as well. And we will also have... Yuck Mouth from the Loonies.
Who?
Yuck Mouth from the Loonies.
No idea.
Don't worry about it. You'll be listening, though.
All right.
That's your music, Grant.
You're a beauty. All right. We are taking your phone calls at 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Tomorrow I'll be on with Doug from Portland. Kings basketball tomorrow against the Blazers. I'll also be doing the Jim Rome Show in the morning. Looking forward to once again being in the jungle. And it should be a lot of fun tomorrow. The Kings with I'll tell you, the Kings can make life. I know that it's almost January, so I don't want to keep on saying it's December because we're at the very tail end. But the point I'm trying to make is, if you look at the standings right now in the NBA, and you look at Portland, and I think they've been the most disappointing team in the Western Conference this year, they already have 20 losses. And tomorrow's game basically then counts as two. The difference between Sacramento and Portland would be four games in a loss column.
Wow.
Portland has 20 losses. Sacramento has 17. Denver has 18. And Portland is 13-20, all right? So they've played two more games than Sacramento. Sacramento tomorrow, if they win, would go to 15-17, and if Portland loses, they would go to 13-21. So it's a huge game tomorrow when you look at the big picture.
Yeah, because you can actually start separating yourself. And this is what we talked about yesterday on air, is the fact that if the Kings can stay in this type of a position where there's one or two games between them and the person in ninth or tenth place, and we're at the All-Star break, which is past the halfway point in the season, we can really start having that conversation.
Yes.
Whereas when you look at the Portland Trailblazers, people are like, what happened to the Portland Trailblazers? Really, I think that they snuck up on a lot of people last year.
I think,
Grant,
that's a great point.
And now that you've come back around, people are getting a look at you, and they're seeing how do you guard these guys, and it's tougher the second time around.
All right, if you want to talk about that, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Last night, Portland played at home, and they lost to Toronto 95-91. All right, let's get to some phone calls. We get to Lou. What's up, Lou?
Lou, how you? I mean, Lou, I'm talking to myself. But either way, how are you, sir?
How are you today?
I'm doing really well. I just want to say one thing on the Raiders, and then I'll let you talk, okay?
Yeah. Well, that's very nice of you that you'll let me talk. Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry. Okay. I believe that the Oakland Raiders have enough of a line, and also McGloin's been there for quite some time. He knows everything that's going on. They say he practices like a starter, and I think that he will be ready, and I believe that the Broncos are bad enough to lose this weekend.
I don't disagree with that. I could see the Raiders easily beating Denver. Denver has absolutely nothing to play for. I could see the Raiders winning this week.
And just one more thing, please. I believe that if he gets this win under him, it'll do wonders. And if they have to play the Houston Texans, that they will beat them also. So I'll listen to you.
Yeah, they're not going to play the Houston Texans. They're going to end up playing the Pittsburgh Steelers next.
Yeah. I think it's imperative, to the caller's point, it's imperative that he plays well this weekend to really garner, you know, the confidence of his troops.
Carl, you're on with Grant and Doug. Hi, Carl.
Hey, how are you guys?
What's happening?
Well, just driving around listening to you, really, so it's a great day.
Well, there you go. I agree with you. Thank you.
Hey, I got a question in particular for Doug.
Hey.
And the spot by the Kings has been really great lately. I love the fact that we've got some wins. It looked like they're playing a little more confidence. But I wanted to ask you, when you watch a guy like DeMarcus Cousins, who I would say, if I was thinking of a word that describes him on the court, at least how he looks publicly, he looks temperamental. Like he's, you know, just scowling. I mean, I know me, if I scored 55 points in a game, you wouldn't see me scowling. I'd be jumping around and patting people on the back and thinking it was the happiest day ever. Yet when he does that, he looks like he's been roughed up, like he's getting jobbed by everybody. I just want to know what you think as a former teammate to other players, what is that like having a temperamental teammate do to your game and to other people's games on the court? Is he the guy that's helping other people off the floor first? Is he only caring about himself? Or what do you see like as a teammate in that guy?
You know, it can be really tough on teammates. You will need the type of temperament to be able to function with someone, because I can think of, you know, I'm going to use some big names, but Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan, a lot of those guys really were very, very tough on their teammates, and it ultimately made their teammates better. DeMarcus is a very willing passer, though. When he's out there on the floor, it's not in a selfish way that he's trying to get it. Ultimately, what I see is a young man that wants to really, really bad. He wants to win, and he's trying to figure out how do I get to that level and how do I do it. I don't think he necessarily cares of the way that he looks on the floor, because that's, you know, he's competing. But when you see him off the floor with kids and different things, then you can judge maybe his demeanor, because that, I think, is who DeMarcus is. In the competition realm, he is very competitive. He can go the wrong way and be ultra and maybe go overboard. But it depends. You know, you got to have some strong-minded teammates that are ready to compete with him, because he's going to require the absolute best.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, I think it all, what you said makes sense. I'm thinking back in your era when Weber got brought here.
Uh-huh.
C-Web had a bad reputation, I think. He'd not really done, you know, I think what he should have done in Golden State, and then later when he got moved. When he got to the Kings, I felt like watching you guys, there was maturity around him and people like Vlade that just made everybody on the court better. And it wasn't just because how they played, it was also their demeanor and leadership. And I wonder if he can do that, or if it's going to be other teammates, like you said, who have to be strong-minded and come in and help him that way.
I think that he needs some help as well. That was something that was insulated when you mentioned Vlade. Vlade was just probably the best teammate ever. I mean, just an incredible guy in the locker room. But you're right. We had a lot of different guys. It was a highly competitive atmosphere in practice, and we would go at each other to the point of sometimes no return, but that made us better. But we knew that we were all playing for the same thing. So it was, you know, it's a little different. You got to get those type of people in here, though, that will play with DeMarcus and go out there and push him, but are able at the same time to accept what he is giving and what he is bringing to the table as well.
All right, we'll be right back. More of your phone calls here on Sports 1140.
It's 4:47, time for Jacuzzi of Sacramento's 2016 floor model clearance, jacuzziofsacramento.com.
All right, NBA tonight, light schedule: Memphis, Boston, Oklahoma City, Miami, Houston, Dallas, and Utah at the L.A. Lakers. I'm looking at, you know, the Utah Jazz, and I'm just wondering when they're ever going to get healthy. And, you know, right now they've lost three in a row. All right? So they've lost three in a row, 18 and 13, and they really need their guys back. Alec Burks is recovering from ankle surgery. George Hill's only played, you know, in 11 games. And I'm just wondering, how good is that team going to be? They just got Derek Favors back last week. I'm just wondering how good they could be if they get everyone healthy at the same time.
Well, I think the main one is George Hill.
Because no doubt.
That's what they've been looking for. They've been looking for a leader, a floor general. And I've liked him ever since he was in the Spurs. Then he did well in Indiana. But if he can get well and all of a sudden they just start to mesh. And because with Rudy Gobert, man, he is a – he's an interesting piece. You can do so many different things with him. Offensively, you don't think, Grant, you don't have to run plays for him. But in the play for somebody else, he is a big, prominent piece. We saw that pick and roll, alley-oop many, many times, and that is a formidable play because if you don't respect it, all of a sudden guys are going to get off for shots. So, yeah, if that team gets healthy, watch out.
All right. Again, tomorrow it's Sacramento and Portland, and that means – it's Myers Leonard and DeMarcus Cousins. I don't want to say round two because it started last year. There's no love lost between these two guys. Myers Leonard's not backing down. He doesn't have the talent and the skill set to play with DeMarcus, but he gives everything he has. It got very chippy, and it got volatile last week, and I don't think the officials are going to allow this game to get out of hand the way last week's did. I think this game's going to be called, you know, very, very tight at the beginning, and I think these players are going to have to react to that.
And that's where DeMarcus can really take advantage, because if he keeps his calm, you know, for instance, catches the ball, uses his pivot, and really chooses, because if there's any hard bumping, the foul is going to get called. It's not going to be any, you know, middle of the way. It's going to get called. And that's where DeMarcus, because he is superior offensively, the whistle should lean more towards him.
And it doesn't look like Rudy Gay is going to play tomorrow. He aggravated the hip injury in the third quarter last night, and so he probably will not go tomorrow. Don't know yet about Aaron Aflalo, who sat out last night's game with an elbow. But, you know, the Kings right now getting very good performances from their other players that have filled in at those positions. So next man up, you know, next man up.
What do you think about Lillard? Do you think he'll play, or
he's
day-to-day?
He's day-to-day. You know, okay. He had the x-rays, and the x-rays were negative, okay? Mm-hmm. And now it's just a matter of how he feels. You know, listen, you play with a lot of guys where they turn their ankle, and you're like, oh, my gosh, he's going to be out for a month, and then you see him at practice the next day. Mitch Richmond was like that. I mean, I'd never forget. Mitch looked like, you know, he had been shot by an anti-aircraft gun, and, you know, you would have to help him off the floor, and you were like, oh, my gosh, and then the next day he'd be playing again.
Yeah,
you know?
some guys, high pain tolerance, and a lot of it, Grant, actually has to do with swelling, because if it swells, the joint just locks up. You can't move it too much, especially in the ankle, because blood is, you know, everything's draining down, going down. So with Lillard, I saw the ankle sprain, and it looked like he tweaked it pretty good.
Yep.
I will say that they would probably have to lean on the side of caution with him, because he is your marquee player.
And they've lost six in a row and 9 out of 10.
Man.
They're ripe to get beat again by the Kings. Let's see if they can get it done. Ken, welcome to the show. Hey, Ken.
Hey, Grant. Hey, Doug.
Hey.
Hey, Grant, I had a question about the game last night.
Yes.
I can't recall at what point it was, but there was a ball that was thrown to Ben McLemore in the corner, and it looked he stumbled and fell, and the ball went out of bounds, and the Kings still received the ball. I'm not sure what happened.
What happened was, and I didn't know this until the end of the game, the referee tripped him, which the referee's part of the court, but the referee blew his whistle inadvertently, and the Kings still had possession, so therefore they gave him the ball.
Really?
Yep.
Man, I've seen things this year, Grant, that I've never seen before.
Yeah, the referee tripped him. The referee blew his whistle inadvertently. It was still the Kings' possession, and thus...
What's an inadvertent whistle when you're falling down? You just kind of squeeze one out?
I don't know, man, but I'm just telling you what happened. Isn't that odd?
That is very odd.
All right, that's all I wanted to know. Thanks, Grant.
All right, thank you. It was in the corner across from the Kings bench, and when I saw it in live action, I was like, I just thought he fell down.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, and then we went to the commercial break, and I said, let me see, and it looked like the official tripped him, and then it was an inadvertent whistle.
Ah, well,
because the officials, if you trip over an official, that's just the way it is. They're part of the court.
I've been tripped by an official before and run into them. Yeah, because they're very close to the action.
They are.
And in the court, there's not a lot of
especially
room.
Especially at ARCA where you played.
Yes, and you're moving so fast. A lot of times they're looking someplace else. You don't see them, and bang, you run into them. But, I mean, good for the Kings.
All right. If you want to call the program, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. It's 453. Time for a retirement checkup. Call David Hedger at Granite Bay Asset Management Group, 791-1737. I don't know the folks that are listening right now, but these bowl games that are being played, I'd rather watch paint peel off my wall in my living room than watch the bowl games that are going on right now. I mean, it's just absurd. It really is. And I know that, you know, there are people that live and die by these games, and of course, there are people that have, you know, money on the games, and I just, like, for instance, the Heart of Dallas Bowl. I don't need to watch that, okay? I don't need to see that. But don't forget about the Motel 6 Cactus Bowl that's coming up between Baylor and Boise State. And if that's not enough, you've got the Gilden New Mexico Bowl with New Mexico and Texas San Antonio that was played last week, all right? I hope you avoid the Las Vegas Bowl between Houston and San Diego State, or the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl.
Well,
don't forget, you know, these are the games, you know. I mean, I watched the game for 30 seconds, and I am not kidding you, in Hawaii, the Hawaii Bowl, and Hawaii was playing in the game.
You turned
and I am not, I watched the opening kickoff because I wanted to see what it was, and I saw the opening kickoff. Then I saw Hawaii run onto the field, and then I'm looking, and there's literally nobody at the game. Like, there must have been 100, 200 people at the game.
Whoa.
And I'm just like, wait a minute. I'm watching the Hawaii Bowl with Hawaii playing, and nobody cares? Click.
Hey, well, that's better. You know, did you see a refrigerator spoil milk bowl?
I missed that one.
You missed that one. That was great. There are some names, Grant, that I won't be tuning in for. Just saying.
Let me see who won that game. Let's see. Hawaii, 52. Oh, Middle Tennessee State, 35. Let me see what they announced the attendance in that game. I'm just curious what they announced the attendance. I mean, it was embarrassing. Like, it was embarrassing.
More players than
honestly, it was embarrassing. It was like, come on. And you've got Hawaii playing in the game, and there is literally nobody at the game. Jeff, you're on with Grant and Doug.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's happening?
Nothing much. Yeah, I was at the game last night. It was my first game at Golden One. And that place is, you can't even explain it to somebody. It's beautiful. But what was fun to watch was Embiid and DeMarcus fighting, not really fighting, but, you know, going at each other. At one moment when they started slapping each other's asses, and just sort of running down the court, man, it was just fun to watch, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, it was fun to watch them play, and I can't wait now for the game on the 30th. They announced the crowd, by the way, at 23,175. If they took the 23 out and just put 175, that would be
you
more
believe
likely.
It.
Yeah, it was a good game, Jeff. There's no question about it. Austin, you're next here on Sports 1140.
Grant, first time, long time. Just moved here from the Bay Area to Folsom, so glad to hear your voice in here, man.
Well, great. Welcome, man. Great to have you in the area.
2 points real quick. So we need to have the truth bowl, because ever since I've heard you the first time, I'm ashamed to say it. Well, not really. It was on Rome, but I started listening locally to the radio stations here because, man, you speak the truth, and I love it. Anyway, the truth bowl will be anybody who's good at football, because all of these bowls are a freaking joke. That joke aside, listen, these referees in basketball, in football, in baseball, I'm not one for, you know, the camera in every angle to decide, but when is enough enough? Because at the end of the day, we have too many technicals, we have too many personal fouls, and we have way too many pass interference calls that really just aren't right, and they're deciding games. I want your take on that,
okay?
Because I feel like games are getting ruined.
All right, and by the way, just to embellish the bowl game, there was a game played today between Army and North Texas. I wouldn't know where North Texas is if you, like, you know, drove me there in a car and let me get out and walk around. And their and their record is 5-8. Why the hell is North Texas playing in a bowl game, you know, at 5-8? I'll tell you why, because nobody else wanted to play. We've got to go. I'll answer that question.
Money,
yeah, I know.
I know.
No, I know.
Money.
I'm just being. But as far as what you're saying, there's got to be a system, especially in football with these pass interference calls. There's got to be a way around that because you're right. It is costing teams games, and there's got to be an answer.
And when you talk about baseball, I electronic strike zone.
No, I'm not down with that.
No, I like the umps.
Not happening.
Yeah. Do you miss
calls?
That's
the beauty of the game.
Exactly. You miss calls. Some guys
stretch
the
strike. The essence of baseball.
Exactly. Don't do that, please.
All right. We'll come back right here. Sports 1140 KHDK.